Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Proverbs chapter 26. I will call this chapter Proverbs of Solomon, part 17. We begin now in verse 1. Solomon says, like snow in summer and like rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool. It's not appropriate to give a fool honor. That should be obvious. And the comparisons that Solomon gives us is like snow in summer, because snow doesn't snow in summer. And rain in harvest, you don't harvest in the rainy season. So it's not fitting to give honor to an idiot. Here's some other scriptures. Proverbs 17:7, excellent speech is not fitting for a fool, much less are lying lips to a prince. Proverbs 19:10, luxury is not fitting for a fool, much less for a slave to rule over princes. Ecclesiastes 10:6, Solomon says, folly is set in many exalted places, while rich men sit in humble places. In other words, the cream does not always rise to the top. A fool is not to be associated with excellent speech, Proverbs 17. He's not to be associated with luxury, Proverbs 19, because he's a fool. He can't make any money because he's an idiot. But unfortunately, and also, a fool is not fitting for honor, as Proverbs 26 says. So no honor, no excellent speech, no luxury for a fool. But unfortunately, as Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 10:6, fools end up in high places. I'm tempted to make a comment on today's current political situation, but I will not do so. Rain falling in harvest is so rare that it is considered a miracle. If we will look at 1 Samuel 12, verses 16 through 17, which is a part of Samuel's final public speech, Samuel says this, now therefore, present yourselves and see this great thing that the Lord will do before your eyes. Isn't the wheat harvest today? I will call on the Lord, and he will send thunder and rain, so that you will know and see what a great evil you committed in the Lord's sight by requesting a king for yourselves. Samuel called on the Lord, and on that day the Lord sent thunder and rain. As a result, all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. And the reason they feared Samuel is because rain and thunder in harvest time is not something you normally see. We go now to Proverbs 26:2. Solomon says, like a sparrow in its flitting, like a swallow in its flying, so a curse without cause does not alight. Now, what does this proverb mean? We're here a couple of options. Option number one, the proverb means that no fool or wicked man can lay effective curses on a righteous man. And I think that's what it does mean. Another way to interpret this is to say that no penal evil shall fall on innocent people. No curse, no punishment will fall on someone without cause because the person is innocent. I don't think that's what Solomon meant here. And of course, the application is that Christians should not fear demon worshipers who try to put curses on them. A lot of people do fear curses. The curse causeless will not fall. Now, this is a curse without cause. That implies that if there is a cause, a curse can land. So we need to keep ourselves innocent and forgiven by Jesus if we are worried about curses falling on our heads. I was just listening to an NBA podcast. It turns out that Mr. Reddick thinks that Derek White of the Boston Celtics is under some sort of a curse. I don't know what curse that was. I haven't heard this yet. People still today in the 21st century are talking about curses. Now, they're sort of laughing about it. But after a while, people begin to think, maybe there's something true to this. Proverbs 26:3, a whip is for the horse, Solomon says, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the back of fools. A fool is just as obstinate as an unbroken horse or a stubborn donkey. You've seen these Western movies where somebody volunteers to break the horse, and the horse jumps all over the place and kicks and bucks. Very dangerous. You have to whip the horse to get it in line. A donkey won't move, so you got to put a bridle over his nose and pull him along because he's stubborn. Likewise, a fool, if you want to get him to act right, you got to whip him on his back with a rod. Another proverb says the same thing. Proverbs 19:29, judgments are prepared for scoffers and blows for the back of fools. Wise men don't need rods to tell them what to do. Wise men are internally directed. A fool has got to learn it by getting hit on his back. There are two types of people in the world, people who are cautious and learn from the experience of others and from their own experience. And there's some people that are just plain doggone stubborn and have got to be hit in the head with a 2x4 before they will listen to reason. Go now to Proverbs 26, verses 4 through 5. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will also be like him. Answer a fool as his folly deserves, that he not be wise in his own eyes. Now this proverb does not say, do not answer a fool ever. It says, do not answer a fool according to his folly. The proverb is silent about, or at least verse 4 is silent about, answering a fool with wisdom. Can we do that? Well, verse 5 says, answer a fool as his folly deserves, i.e. with wisdom. So yes, we can answer fools, but don't use foolishness to answer him with. Adam Clark says that sometimes a fool or wicked man is not to be answered at all, as the ministers of Hezekiah answered not a word to Rabshakeh. You know that great incident in 701 BC when Sennacherib was coming down on Jerusalem. Nor Jeremiah the prophet to Hananiah, nor Christ to the scribes and Pharisees, when Jesus was being tried by the kangaroo courts of the Jews in the Sanhedrin. At some point, Jesus didn't even answer. At some points, he did. But then after it became apparent that this was a kangaroo court peopled by a bunch of fools, Jesus just didn't answer. Clark goes on to say, and when an answer is returned, it should not be in his foolish way and manner, rendering evil for evil and railing for railing in the same virulent, lying, calumniating, and reproachful language. So why should a wise man answer a fool as his folly deserves? Well, to expose his folly, especially if there are people watching who might need to learn from the situation. Now, of course, if the fool won't listen, don't cast your pearls before a swine. Don't waste your time. Don't talk to him. In that case, you should be silent. So you either use wisdom to answer the fool if there's a chance that he will listen, or if bystanders need to hear your wisdom and bystanders need to see the foolishness squashed, or if it's not going to do any good, there are no bystanders who can profit by the interchange, be quiet. Don't answer. We go down to Proverbs 26, verse 6. He cuts off his own feet and drinks violence who sends a message by the hand of a fool. Well, it's hard to deliver a message with no feet. It's just as hard to deliver a message using a fool for the messenger. What does the fool messenger do wrong? Well, he doesn't deliver the message properly. He might take the message to the wrong party. He might garble the message and give the wrong message even to the right party, but the message is wrong. Also, the fool messenger might bring the response back and screw that up too, garble that, misinterpret that. Lots of things a messenger can do because you're not dealing face to face. And you know that game of gossip where you say one thing and ask the next person to repeat it, and the message gets garbled in the transmission. We go now to Proverbs 26, verse 7. Like the legs which are useless to the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. A leg, like a proverb, is useful only to one who knows how to use it. Just because one can quote a proverb doesn't mean he can live it. Here's a similar proverb in Proverbs 17:7. Excellent speech is not fitting for a fool, much less are lying lips to a prince. So a fool can give excellent speech quoting somebody else's proverbs, in fact, quoting one of Solomon's proverbs, but if he's not going to live by it, he's just like a man who has legs but can't walk. The fool has lips and a mouth, but they're not working because they're useless as they quote the proverb. We go now to Proverbs 26:8. Solomon says, like one who binds a stone in a sling, so is he who gives honor to a fool. We can see in this chapter that Solomon does not suffer fools gladly. Why would one bind a stone in a sling? Well, that would be stupid because then the sling could not throw the rock and the sling would become utterly worthless. So you give honor to a fool and you are doing something that will be utterly worthless. If you honor a fool, people will then start thinking you are a fool for giving honor to the fool. Now, there is an alternate translation of this proverb. Gill and Clark bring it out. As a piece of precious stone among a heap of stones, so is he that gives honor to a fool. In other words, if you put a diamond in the midst of a bunch of rocks, you are destroying the value of the diamond. Same thing, if you give honor to a fool, you're destroying yourself. That must be a minority translation. I did find one translation that agreed with Gill and Clark on that, Proverbs 26:8. And the Darby translation says, as a bag of gems in a stone heap, so is he that giveth honor to a fool. Either way, the sentiment is clear. Do not give honor to a fool. I think of a current administration who gave somebody a nuclear clearance. The guy claims he's non-binary, whatever that means. He's neither male nor female. He had a bald head, bright red lipstick, and looked like something out of a Batman comic book, an absolute joke, and yet he had a nuclear clearance. Somebody gave honor to that fool. I won't mention any names. We go down to Proverbs 26:9, like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Same idea here from the proverb we read in verse 7. So, like the legs which are useless to the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Now here, a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard is like a proverb in the mouth of fools. Not only worthless, like a lame leg, but damaging like a thorn. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says, quote, as vexatious and unmanageable as a thorn in a drunkard's hand is a parable to a fool. He will be as apt to misuse it as to use it rightly. Now we have a translation issue in verse 9. The NASB said, like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, which sounds like the thorn is piercing the drunkard's hand because he's so drunk he doesn't realize what he's grabbing. But let's look at some other translations. The KJV says, as a thorn goeth up into the hand of a drunkard, same idea, the drunkard grabs the thorn. The Holman Christian Study Bible says, a proverb in the mouth of a fool is like a stick with thorns brandished by the hand of a drunkard. Now there, the thorn does not go into the hand of a drunkard. The thorn is stuck into a stick, and the drunkard's swinging the stick around, so the thorn ends up stuck into somebody else, which is a different idea. Proverbs 26:9 in the God's Word translation says, like a thorn stuck in a drunk's hand, so is a proverb in the mouths of fools. There, that goes along with the KJV and the NASB, the thorn stuck in the drunkard's hand. New American Bible, on the other hand, says, like a thorn stick brandished by the hand of a drunkard is a proverb in the mouth of fools. And that translation goes along with the Holman Christian Study Bible translation. The thorn is not in the hand of the drunkard. The thorn is in a stick, and the drunkard is swinging the stick. Young's Literal Translation says, a thorn hath gone up into the hand of a drunkard. So literally, according to that translation, the thorn sticks in the hand rather than in a stick brandished by the drunkard. Either way, it's an unpleasant situation to have a thorn stuck anywhere. That's what it's like to listen to a fool spouting what he thinks is wisdom. That proverb is perfectly applicable to a lot of college professors. You will see these people pontificating. They think they know everything, and they're fools. They're idiots. Of course, you can't say anything about it, but I've seen many examples of that in my decades-long academic career. There's no humility on a college campus. It's like finding somebody in Washington, D.C. who wants to balance the budget. You're just not going to find somebody like that, and you're not going to find humility on a college campus. We go now to Proverbs 26:10. Like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. Of course, hiring somebody that passes by means just hiring any old person that passes by regardless of their qualifications, with no investigation into their qualifications. Nobody who's wise will do that, and nobody who's wise will hire a fool, because a fool will make a fool out of you real quick because he represents you. Now we have a translation issue in verse 10 also. Here's some other translations. KJV, the great God that formed all things both rewardeth the fool and rewardeth transgressors. Now, that's a totally different translation, as you can see. The NASB has, like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool. KJV says, the great God that formed all things, not an archer, rewards the fool and rewards transgressors, which is not even in the NASB translation, the rewarding of transgressors. Of course, if we take the KJV translations, what this means is that the fool and the transgressors are both rewarded with punishment. It's not really a reward, it's a reverse reward. Green's Literal Translation says, great is the former, that's capital F-O-R-M-E-R, the one who forms. Great is the former of all things, but he who hires a fool is like one who hires those passing by. That's similar to the KJV, the great God that formed all things, the great former. The Young's Literal Translation is similar to the Green's Literal Translation. Great is the former, capital F-O-R-M-E-R, of all. And he is rewarding a fool and is rewarding transgressors. The English Standard Version says, like an archer who wounds everyone is one who hires a passing fool. That's similar to the NASB. The American Standard Version says, as an archer that woundeth all, so is he that hireth a fool. That's also similar to the NASB. The Darby Translation says, a master roughly worketh everyone. A bad boss, bad to his employees. Well, that's not an archer who wounds everyone, and that's not the great God who formed everything. That's a unfortunate boss. So that's another translation. God's Word translation says, like many people who destroy everything. That's not really an archer who wounds everything. That's not really God who forms everything. It's not really like a master who roughly treats his workers. It's just people who destroy everything. Another translation. The New American Bible says, like an archer wounding all who pass by is he who hires a drunken fool. So that translation is like the NASB. So obviously, the Hebrew is difficult to translate, but the idea is the same. If you hire a fool, that is analogous to something really bad. Now, I'm assuming that the KJV and the Young's Literal Translation is not the right reading, because there, it's God, not somebody bad, like an archer who's gone crazy, or a bad employer, or people who are destroying everything, but it's God. God doesn't really hire the fool. He rewards the fool, and not with money, but with punishment. So there's a fairly big difference in translations there. But we're going to take the NASB, like an archer who wounds everyone. So you hire some crazy person, he's going to get his fellow workers hurt when he does crazy stuff. We go now to Proverbs 26:11. Solomon says, like a dog that returns to its vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. So you've got a dog, he's sick to start with, and then he throws up. And so he sees his vomit, and he says, I think I'm going to eat my vomit. Well, that's going to make the dog even sicker. When the dog eats his vomit, his act is disgusting to others who see it, but the fool is stupid enough to delight in what he's doing, just like the dog is delighting in what he's doing, eating his vomit. Now, this disgusting metaphor is quoted by Peter in 2 Peter 2:22. It has happened to them according to the true proverb, a dog returns to its own vomit, and a sow, after washing, returns to wallowing in the mire. That's people who leave the church and go back into the world. I never have understood those people. I don't understand dogs eating vomit either. We go down to Proverbs 26:12. Solomon says, do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. I just mentioned all the academics I've been acquainted with over the last several decades. And of all those proud academics, the ones that are the most proud are in law schools. You have never seen so much arrogance in your life than on a law school campus. There's more hope for a fool than a law school professor, because they're all wise in their own eyes. They know everything. John Gill says, quote, man is a creature but of small knowledge in things natural, civil, mechanical, philosophical, moral, or divine, yet greatly conceited for the most part of his knowledge and wisdom. In other words, man doesn't know much compared to God, but he thinks he knows everything. I love that proverb. And of course, we all need to be careful, not just college professors or law school professors. All of us, normal people, need to be humble and not wise in our own eyes. If somebody else wants to think you're wise, that's fine, but you don't think you're wise, because you know that the more you know, the less you know. The more you know, the more you know how much you don't know. We go now to Proverbs 26, verses 13 through 16. The sluggard says, there is a lion in the road. A lion is in the open square. As the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He is weary of bringing it to his mouth again. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer. Now, I've quoted this sluggard verse many times because Solomon really had it in for sluggards, just like he had it in for fools, and scattered all through the book of Proverbs are exhortations against laziness. So I've already read these verses, but I'll read them again very quickly. Proverbs 10:4, poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Proverbs 12:24, the hand of the diligent will rule, but the slack hand will be put to forced labor. Proverbs 19:15, laziness cast into a deep sleep, and an idle man will suffer hunger. Proverbs 24, verses 30 through 34, I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense, and behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles, its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. When I saw, I reflected upon it, I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, then your poverty will come as a robber, and your want like an armed man. Proverbs 6:6-11, go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which, having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond and your need like an armed man. That's a little repetitious in Proverbs 6, repeating what Solomon said in Proverbs 24. And then Proverbs 19:24, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish, but will not even bring it back to his mouth. He's too lazy even to stick his food with a fork and bring it to his mouth. Now, it's obvious what Solomon is saying about laziness. He does it very poetically and very graphically. Here in our verses, in Proverbs 26, 13 through 16, Solomon mentions a sluggard who says there's a lion in the road. Now, there's two ways you can interpret that. First of all, you could say, oh, that's just a dumb excuse by the sluggard. He doesn't want to work, so he calls out, there's a lion in the road, can't get out of bed. Lion might eat me. And, of course, there's no lion in the road. That's one way. Or there might actually be a lion in the road, a lion in the open square. And the sluggard says, there's a lion in the road, can't go to work. You go get rid of him. I'm not going to lift a finger to help you. Well, I'm not sure what the odds are of a lion actually being in the public square in the ancient Near East or in Israel, so I don't know. But either way, the sluggard is disgusting. Verse 14, as the door turns on its hinges, a door moves, but it doesn't move from its place. A sluggard on his bed moves as he tosses to and fro, but he doesn't get out of his place to do any work. Verse 15 repeats the other proverb I read about the sluggard burying his hand in the dish. He won't bring it to his mouth. That's the same proverb as we saw in Proverbs 19, verse 24. And then verse 16, the sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer. Of course, seven is the number of perfection, so we're talking about a hypothetical group of men who are perfectly wise. Their wisdom has reached ultimate perfection and maturity, and they give a wise answer. But as wise as those guys are, the sluggard thinks he's wiser than they are. This, of course, ties in with verse 12 in our chapter here in chapter 26. Solomon says there's more hope for a fool than for the man who is wise in his own eyes. And the sluggard is wise in his own eyes. So the sluggard is also a fool. The fool might not be a sluggard, but the sluggard is a fool. We go down to verse 17 of Proverbs 26. Solomon says, like one who takes a dog by the ears is he who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. This is another one of my favorite proverbs. Well, how can one meddle in a dispute that doesn't belong to you? Well, you could get involved by taking one side or the other. That's really dangerous. It's not your business, and yet you decide you're going to stick up with somebody in the fight. Or it could be you have more honorable motives, and you are a mediator, and you come in and say, hey, I can straighten this out. I can settle it. This reminds me of a true story. There was a huge dispute in a church in Jacksonville, Florida, I believe it was, and somebody I had met at one of my house church conferences knew me that way. I didn't know him well. He sends me an email and says, I need to go down there and help straighten that mess out. Well, I could have been honored by that he thought I was such a mediator that I could fix up the situation, but I immediately said, no, I'm sorry. I said, I don't know the church members. I don't know anybody in the church. I don't know the elders. I don't know what the dispute is. Of course, I'm not going to go down there and do that. And for my efforts, this man then sends me an email, calls me a coward. Now, if I'd have been more up on my proverbs, I would have responded with Proverbs 26, 17. Like one who takes a dog by the ears is he who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. I am not a coward, but I am somebody who's got just a modicum of common sense. Now, this is talking about meddling with strife not belonging to you, but how might a quarrel belong to you and you have to get involved with it? Well, what happens if the people involved are your acquaintances or your friends, and you want to straighten out a dispute with your friends? Well, that involves you because they're your friends. Or maybe they're your relatives. You want to straighten them out. What about if you're in a workplace dispute? I just saw a video just a few minutes ago of a stewardess on an Indian airline got in a dispute with a passenger, and of course passengers can be pretty obnoxious, but she just lost it, and she started screaming and hollering at the passenger, and the pastor's screaming back at her, saying, why are you yelling at me? And she says, I'm not yelling at you, but she was yelling at him. She lost her temper. And another stewardess grabbed the first flight attendant and moved her on down the aisle out of harm's way. Now, that's okay. That strife does belong to you. That's a workplace situation. Likewise, in baseball brawls, you'll always see people grab the manager and pull him away from the umpire as he's yelling and screaming at the top of his lungs. Actually, rhubarbs with umpires are a part of the sport. I love watching them. I don't know why. It's probably a sin, especially when they start kicking dirt on the umpire's shoes. Now, one kind of dispute that one really needs to avoid getting involved in, because it's like picking up a dog by the ears. And by the way, when you pick up a dog by the ears, that dog's going to bite you. Well, if you see a domestic dispute between a husband and a wife, you need to stay out of that one. There is a former New York City policeman from Long Island who goes to my church, and he did a lot of domestic dispute calls. and he would tell me how he diffused the situation. He said most of the time he did, and I was awestruck by it. I said, man, you should be a diplomat. But of course, that dispute did belong to him because that was his job. So, this proverb means stay out of disputes you don't need to get involved with. We go down to Proverbs 26, verses 18 through 19. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, was I not joking? A firebrand, of course, is a burning torch that burns up houses and barns and so forth. You throw it in the hay, it catches the barn on fire. A madman who shoots arrows, a madman who kills. That's a pretty serious situation. Verse 19, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was joking. Of course, that's a lie. The man wasn't joking when he deceived his neighbor. Then when he gets caught, I didn't really mean it. A lot of politicians today use this maneuver. They say something that's egregiously awful, and then they say, oh, I was just joking. Now, what makes this so effective is that sometimes politicians really are joking. But the political environment, especially these days, is so unforgiving, no one can understand a joke, that basically humor is killed now. Politicians can't even make a joke anymore. Neither can stand-up comedians. Now, of course, this proverb says nothing about joking with your neighbor. Of course, you can tell a joke with your neighbor if you are really joking with your neighbor and you're not intending to deceive him. We go down to Proverbs 26, verses 20 through 21. For lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, contention quiets down. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Now, related to this proverb is Proverbs 16, 28. A perverse man spreads strife, and a slanderer separates intimate friends. Now, I have a personal story here about a slanderer who separates intimate friends. This man was a church wrecker that I and two of my friends got involved with on a ministry level. We invited him to speak at our conferences. I'll just give you his initials, BJ. And BJ had a mouth that was unbelievable. He would go around and say all kind of nasty things about everybody. He wrecked one church completely, and another church he was in the process of wrecking. So I will just say I've got friend one who had his church wrecked and friend two who almost had his church wrecked. Now, I was in China at the time, most of the time, and so I was sort of peripherally involved because I was friends with the two friends who were getting slandered by Mr. BJ. Well, as things progressed, this man managed to separate me from one of my closest friends for 8 years. I didn't say a word to him for 8 years. My friend number one was also friends with this other friend, and he didn't say anything to him either, and he was pretty offended. And friend number one was completely alienated from two of his close friends in his church, and on it went. Well, it boils down to where I and friend number one were the only two people who were willing to do anything about this and say, we need to stand up. We need to stand up and stop this guy. But friend number two was not willing to do that and thought it was not worth the trouble. Just let him go. And I realized that there was nothing we could do. So I told friend number one, we need to shut up and refuse to talk to anybody about this because we don't have a chance. And so we did. And I would tell him if he would bring it up to me, I said, remember, we're not going to talk about this. Not even with each other are we going to talk about this. Sure enough, the fire went out. Time goes on. Mr. BJ got exposed. I even wrote an article that went on the internet that basically ruined his ministry here in America, as far as I know. People would always Google his name, and there was my article. And so the fire went out, and more people came to see what a contentious man, what a strife monger this guy was. And so they turned on him, and we got allies, and we finally put the fire out. Now, that story is not quite apropos because in the proverb it's talking about the whisperer, the slanderer, who is making the fire go. And I was not a slanderer. My friend was not a slanderer when we quit talking about it. Well, if good people quit talking about it and the fire goes out, well, likewise, if the gossip, the slanderer quits talking, well, the fire will go out. So if you want the fire to go out, you got to get rid of the slanderer, the one who's whispering, saying evil things about his brother. That's why we have church discipline. You've got to take care of people like that. If you don't, you'll pay a bitter, bitter price. Now, notice in verse 20, where there is no whisperer, contention quiets down. Note that the receiver of gossip keeps a fight going as well as the gossiper. We go now to Proverbs 26, verse 22. The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts of the body. This whisperer is the gossip, the slanderer. Why are his words like dainty morsels? Because people like to eat dainty morsels, and people like to listen to gossip. There's another similar proverb in Proverbs 18:8. Solomon says, "The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts of the body." When you eat something, it goes all the way down into your stomach. And when you listen to gossip, it goes all the way down into your soul. Food will nourish you in the stomach, but the gossip will poison you in your soul. Another way that the words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels, not only as to how deep they go inside the person who receives the whisperings, but the whisperings taste sweet to eat, just like a dainty morsel, and so men gladly swallow them. But Adam Clark says that after these words of the whisperer are eaten, they are, quote, "deeply ruinous to the tender bowels," unquote, of the innocent. Gossip will ruin the hearer as well as the speaker. When we get to verse 28 in this chapter, Proverbs 26, we will read, "A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin." There's another proverb against words that are cruel. The words of a whisperer are cruel. It hates those that the lying tongue that utters those words crushes. We go down to Proverbs 26, verses 23 through 26. Solomon says, "Like an earthen vessel overlaid with silver dross, or burning lips and a wicked heart, he who hates disguises it with his lips, but he lays up deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred covers itself with guile, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly." In verse 23, an earthen vessel is mentioned by Solomon. An earthen vessel is not worth anything. It's like a clay pot. You can shatter it. You can break it. It means nothing. Inside of this earthen vessel is nothing but dirt, because it's made out of dirt. But it's overlaid with silver dross. Dross is the waste products that bubble up from silver when silver is refined and purified. That dross is worth nothing, although it looks like silver. And that's important to help us understand this proverb. It looks like silver, but it's no good. Now, the NIV margin makes the point that this could be translated that the earthen vessel, like the vessel of earth, is made up of silver dross. It's not just overlaid with silver dross. With a slight difference in word division of the Hebrew, you get that. So, whichever, is it overlaid with dross or is it completely silver dross? This vessel looks like silver at a distance. And that maintains the meaning of the proverb, because you look at somebody who's giving you wonderful praising words, burning words, words with burning lips, fervent words, these lips which make great professions of friendship. It looks like silver, but it ain't so, because behind those words are hatred. Verse 24, he who hates disguises that hatred with his lips. He lays up deceit in his heart. Flattering words. Folks, here's what John Gill says about that, about this man who speaks graciously and we're not supposed to believe him. In verse 25, this man, quote, "gives good words, flatters with his lips, pretends great kindness and favor, expresses himself in a very gracious and amiable manner in order to gain attention and respect, or when he delivers himself in a submissive and suppliant way, with great humility and deference, or in a mournful and pitiful strain, as if he had the most tender affection and concern. Be not too credulous. Do not suffer yourselves to be imposed upon by him. Be upon your guard. Distrust him. Suspect a snake in the grass." Now, that's a metaphor that's lasted since the 18th century when Gill wrote all the way till now. A snake in the grass. Nothing worse. There are seven abominations in this hypocritical evil man's heart. Seven, of course, is the number of complete perfection and maturity. He is abominable to the max. Now, verse 26, Solomon says, "Though this man's hatred covers itself with guile, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly." In other words, once you get him in a judicial proceeding, when he can be cross-examined, a situation where the truth can be properly judged and proclaimed, he'll be found out. That's what bugs me about all these political charges today. Nobody wants to cross-examine the charges. Oh, the election was stolen. No, it wasn't. Well, put the evidence out there and let's cross-examine it and see. But nobody wants to do that. So huge swaths of the electorate are not convinced one way or the other because there's no evidence, no cross-examination of the evidence. Oh, the vaccines for COVID-19 might be harmful. How do you know? Twitter's suppressing everything that it can, as is Facebook, suppressing all evidence to the contrary. And a lot of this suppression, as we've just found out, has been done at the behest of the FBI, the government. How do you know? How do you know whether Hunter Biden is corrupt? Who knows? Nobody wants to look at the evidence. 51 CIA professionals sign a letter. Nah, his laptop is planted by the Russians. So we can't believe anything bad about Hunter Biden now, can we? Well, all of that wickedness will not be revealed unless it's put out in a fair assembly where everybody can look at it and make a judgment. But if people keep censoring opposing opinions, well, how the heck are you supposed to know whether something is evil or not? You can't. You go now to Proverbs 26, verse 27. Solomon says, he who digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone, it will come back on him. This is the old hoisted on his own petard proverb. That expression is in our English language because Mordecai was fingered by Haman. Haman is the evil minister of King Ahasuerus, Xerxes, and Mordecai was the Jewish guy who was, forgot how he was related to Esther. He was related to her somehow. I think she was his adopted daughter. And Haman builds a gallows to hang Mordecai on. Esther turns the king's heart, and Ahasuerus says, hang Haman on his own petard. A petard is an old English word for gallows. So if a hunter digs a pit for an animal to fall into the animal, and he starts chasing the animal, if he gets where he dug the pit, boom, he falls into the pit. He's trapped by his own pit. Now, what does this mean? It means that people who devise evil for other people oftentimes get caught in their schemes. He who rolls the stone, it will come back on him. Start pushing the stone up the hill, all of a sudden you realize, man, this stone is heavy. And all of a sudden you realize, my strength has dissipated so much that I can't push the stone anymore. In fact, the stone is starting to roll back down on my head. Next thing you know, stone rolls over you and you're flattened. This reminds me of a movie I saw just recently about a woman who had been abused by her husband, and she learned martial arts and she became a vigilante. And there was this man who was abusing his wife and threatening to hurt the woman's two children, so the woman could not leave the house from morning to night because she scared the husband would come back from his financial services job, where he was a manager, wore his nice little coat and tie. He would come back from his job and start abusing her children, so she was scared to leave. So she went to one of these therapy sessions, group therapy, and ran into this vigilante. So the vigilante poses as an insurance agent, comes into the house, the man's sitting there getting ready to buy an insurance policy, and all of a sudden the vigilante looks at him and says, this is what I want you to do. I want you to leave the house. I want you to leave the city. I want you to leave your wife. I want you to take 75% of all your money and send it over to your wife's account, and I want you to quit your job, and I don't want you ever want to come back here. And the man said, who are you? And stands up. You know, he thinks he's going to get this little woman. The next thing you know, she starts using her martial arts on him. Next scene, the man's sitting there limping, bloody, blood all over him. He's signing his bank account over. He calls human resources and retires from his job, and he's gone. So he was digging a pit for his wife and his two stepchildren, but he fell into it. There's something about that just warms the heart. We go down to Proverbs 26:28. A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. The Septuagint translation has, a lying tongue hates truth, and that's true. It also hates those it crushes. A lying tongue crushes people. How does that comport with the proverb that we hear all the time? Sticks and stones can hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. That, my friends, is not an inspired scripture. That is an utter lie. A lying tongue hates those it crushes. You can go to court and pay a lot of damages to people who have slandered you or libeled you. Now, on the other hand, besides slander and libel, is a flattering mouth. This is not the same thing as slander or defamation or libel. This is when somebody butters you up to gain power or access. They're not true friends. They'll leave you when things get bad. Here's another verse written by David talking about flattery. Psalms 12, verse 3. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that speaks great things. May the Lord cut off the lips that flatter. Ladies and gentlemen, with that severe admonition, we are now finished with Proverbs 26 and ready to go to Proverbs 27 in our next audio. I hope you stay tuned for that wisdom contained in chapter 27, and I hope to see you then, and I hope you enjoyed this chapter.